episode of Write Publisher Pete. We're joined by Margaret McGriff. We're talking about platform. No, not the Netflix movie. We're talking about something else. Author platform. What it is and the sorts of things that you need to consider when building yours.
Write, publish, repeat. It echoes through the air. A chorus for creators, a call to those who dare. With cookies as his compass and a pen that won't retreat, he journeys through the pages. Write, publish, repeat.
Hello and welcome to Write, Publish, Repeat, Episode 7, Season 1, Episode 7. And today we're talking about author platform and branding. What the hell is it? And all of that stuff. And we've got with us Margaret McGriff and, of course, my co-host, Sean Platt. And Margaret, before we get into this, how do I introduce you? Author, marketer?
In this day and age, it's both. I think if you wanted to be a writer, you have to learn how to be a marketer. And if you want to work in the marketing space, you have to be a good writer and a storyteller. So it's both.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I love that answer. And I would say that, like, Margaret is a best case scenario. So we used to say it all the time when we first started the first edition of the self-publishing podcast. I mean, even before Write, Publish, Repeat, we said that, like, okay, in the future, a marginal storyteller, you know, who is a brilliant marketer is 100% of the time going to outperform a brilliant storyteller who is a marginal marketer. And not only has that borne out true, it's borne out true in the most obnoxious ways possible. And so it's made it harder for the people who really just want to tell stories. And so we all need that basic marketing tool set. And Margaret is part of our marketing department at Sterling & Stone. And she probably, we're all like scrappy and do what we do. Margaret like does it for a living. And when she joined the company, or actually not when she joined the company, but when she specifically joined the marketing department, she was like, fill this out. Tell us, right? There was all these like branding briefs that she wanted us to go through. And like, you guys, you can't just make it up as you go along. You have to have a lot of intention about it. So she brings intention into the overall brand. What are we trying to communicate? You know, and then smaller, like per author, because we have a lot of different authors and they all need a different voice. So there's still initiatives that Margaret brought to us over a year ago that we'll get to in a year. There's a lot on her mind for the way that authors should market and the way a publishing company should market. So I just figured she'd make a great guest for today talking about all this stuff.
Okay, this first 9-block episode of Write, Publish, Repeat, quote, season 1, is really aimed towards new writers, but we also want to give information to, you know, seasoned vets as well. But specifically for the new writer, what sort of things should they take into consideration when it comes to marketing themselves, when it comes to, you know, having a website, a presence, social media presence?
I think one of the first steps that a new writer can do, especially before their book is even out, is network. Get into the community. Get to where your readers are. It's actually easier to market when you don't have something to sell, so to speak, because then you can focus on building connection. You can focus on bonding with readers who are reading the same books you do, because chances are, if you're writing a story, it's a story that you want to read. And it's based on something that other people have read, right? So getting on social, whether it's Instagram, whether it's TikTok, whether it's, you know, Facebook, Discord, whatever the platform is that you're comfortable with and where your readers will be, start forming those connections and those bonds. Because then by the time your book comes out, you have, quote unquote, like a network of friends. You have a network of people that you've given value to, that you've geeked out over stuff with, that you've shared funny memes. So when they find out that you're having a book, they've already liked you, they've already trusted you, and then it makes that part easier. They want to help you kind of promote. So I think as a new writer, it's actually easier because there's less pressure, right? There's not, you know, I have a book coming out in 2 weeks. How do I build an Instagram account, right? Just start interacting and just being yourself, right? Because that is your brand. You are your brand. And whether you write in romance or you whether you write in fantasy or both, you know, your personality is going to come out in everything that you're doing and that you're writing. So I would say as a new writer, just start. Don't worry too much about what you should say or marketing your book. Just interact with people, make friends. Like I try to say, make friends. Like, you know, make friends with people that would read your book, reading the same things, interacting and having fun and geeking out. So that way when your book does come out, you already have a group of people that want to support you. So I think that's the very first thing.
Dave, it's a little like, Margaret, I don't know how familiar you are with my shenanigans on the YouTube site and stuff that we're doing, because I am doing a lot of that off book, right? And so, but we're doing daily content on YouTube and just putting it out there. And we have no expectation whatsoever that it's going to amount to anything now. It's more the idea of what is the cumulative effect of this 6 months from now, 9 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now. Because if you steadily do it, you do get more and more over the time, and it's like a snowball mm-hmm. rolling downhill. And it's the same thing for the people that you meet. It's the same thing for, you know, any time that you're out there, your author brand gets some amount of attention, and you never know. You know, Dave, you're seeing just kind of behind the scenes, a lot of the things that are getting arranged right now are relationships that we have from a long ass time ago that are all of a sudden, you know, they come back. They're circular. And so it's the same thing. I think that authors make a really big mistake, us included, like historically, where you're in a hurry. Everything's in a hurry. And I think rapid release kind of fucked with us, like our brains, all of us. Like, you have to be in a hurry. You have to do this thing month after month after month, instead of like, hold on a minute. Not every reader is the kind that reads books month after month after month and is like 97 authors that they follow, you know, and it's okay to focus on the reader who's going to read two books a year and one of them might be yours. But if you have enough of them, then that's a whole different career. And it's almost like we have to unlearn all of the urgency that we absorbed over the rapid release era.
Yeah, and it's not just writers too, because I find that in the business space too. It's like, you know, a lot of business people, they want results tomorrow. And, you know, we have a rule, it's called a 3% rule, right? That 3% of people are ready to buy from you at any given time. It's just 3, right? So no one's going to buy from you off the gate off of one post, right? And then you have what I call the rule of 7. You have to hear something 7 times before it sticks. So in both cases, you have to have that consistency. And what better way to build that consistency before you get into launch mode, right? Because again, the pressure's off. So it's just about meeting people and making connections, but it is a long game. And especially now that with rapid release, right, the markets are uber saturated, right? And then you have those very few that hit the top, and then everything else is kind of noise. So there has to be focus on building your own little micro community and having those core, I think it was like 1,000 fans or 100 fans or something like that. But it's true. Like, if you have just even just 100, if you just have 100 people that will buy anything, you're golden, right? It doesn't matter what's happening. They will buy from you.
So what's, you said, find places where your likely readers are. How do you find those places? And how genre specific is this? Are there some genres where it's a lot easier to do than others?
I don't think there's necessarily a genre where it's easier. Again, if you're a new writer, you're writing in the genre that you most likely love to read in, right? So a lot of times that starts with yourself. Where are you hanging out? Where are you getting book recommendations? Who are you talking to about books? You know, are you really active in the Goodreads community because you're really into the reviews, because there's active communities on there and lists? Do you go to Instagram? Do you go to TikTok if you're on the younger side of things, right? Now, there are genres that do better on these platforms, but it all goes back to the audiences, right? So if you have the romanticy, for example, it's very heavy female-dominated audience. I mean, females have been on Instagram forever, whether it was books, whether it's fashion, whether it's beauty, whether it's whatever, you know. And then you have the younger generation who are on the TikTok. But on the flip side, if you're in the gamer community, for example, Twitch is where you want to be at, right? If that's the type of reader and writer that
so
you are.
If you wrote Lit RPG, it would make much more sense to be on Twitch.
Right. I have a younger brother. He's in his 30s, and there's a heavy Twitch community. I wasn't even sure what Twitch was like 2 years ago. And they're on online streaming for like 11, 12 hours, you know, just gaming and doing stuff on there. And some of them are earning money. So just thinking about who you are.
I don't have time to read.
A lot of gamers don't read. I'm notorious about it. But I'm sure there is that Venn diagram of, you know, they're really geeky thing.
It would really just be Lit RPG. Because Lit RPG, that is a genre for, like, a lot of those readers don't typically read other genres. They're trying to get more of the gaming experience. So it makes sense that you would find that reader there. How about TikTok? Are there genres that do exceptionally well? And, you know, conversely, are there genres that, like, don't waste your time? And I know this is rhetorical because I saw what happened, you know, with some of the TikTok experiments that we had. But for people listening, what is the spectrum?
I think the reigning genre on TikTok right now is very much fantasy and romanticy focused. But I've noticed that there are a lot of titles that may have come out. Like, I know, like, Colleen Hoover, her earlier titles blew up on TikTok, like, recently, right? So I think it just all goes back to the users. If you have a younger demographic who are more likely to be on there, tend to skew female. So you think of all of those genres and just thinking about just type of communities and book recommendations. But I'm pretty sure you can find a niche community pretty much anywhere. It just depends on, because the algorithm is going to feed you what you like. So then that's the other caveat too, right? So I may be seeing something all the time, and Dave might be seeing something totally different because we like the same things or like different things. So the algorithm is going to be playing on the things that you already like. So also keeping that in mind too. But again, it all goes back to who you are as a writer and as a reader. You know, what authors do you follow? You know, and then who's following those authors, who's talking about those authors, who's having book clubs about them, and where are they having them? So I think that's where kind of the research starts if you're brand new and don't have a book out yet.
Now, for somebody that is on the antisocial side, perhaps, or shy, how do they...
Are you talking about yourself right now, Dave?
Not at all. How do they get into these communities where they're... Where there are rules, there are, especially something like Reddit, you can screw up really easily on Reddit and, you know, nobody wants to hear from you. So how do you learn the rules of these places and, you know, don't overpromote, be more helpful and stuff like that? What are some of the things that you've seen?
I think you spend time on those platforms. And again, it's easier to do...
Before you post anything.
Yeah, it's easier to do when you don't have a book because you don't even have the temptation to promote yourself because... Your book's not out yet.
Right.
So really take time to learn how that platform works. What kind of, we call it content, but it's Reddit posts, it's videos, it's photos and images, like taking time to really understand how the platform works on a personal level, right? And really learning kind of like those unspoken rules, so to speak, you know, see how the other authors that are in your genre, how are they using the platform and interacting with readers? You know, are there Facebook groups that you can join, right? If you're not sure how Facebook groups work and you happen to like collecting comic books, join a comic book Facebook group. See how the people interact with each other and see the kind of things that go on and learn from those promo posts. If someone else did a promo post and it bombed, okay, that's what I'm not going to do, right? You know, so again, it's so much easier when you don't have anything out because then there's not that temptation to be like, I'm just going to go here and plug my book, as opposed to I'm just going to learn.
It goes back to the patience thing, like just don't be in a hurry, but also just be human. Because if you think about, like, don't treat social spaces differently than normal spaces. And you wouldn't go into a room where you didn't know anybody.
Hey, I got a book!
Hey, buy my book, and waving it around like an idiot. Like, you would be shunned from the room. So online spaces aren't really any different. And I think people make big mistakes when they treat online spaces as magical. Like, there's a lot of magical thinking. I was so guilty of magical thinking when I first went online. Oh, the rules of business are different. Well, no, they're actually not. They're exactly the same. People behave the same. And in social situations, you want to observe. You know, we have two ears and one mouth, right? Most of us don't get that. But if you go into a social situation and just really observe, like spend a month just being helpful, listening, whatever you can before you even ask a question or do anything other than, you know, don't draw attention to yourself, make it about other people. And then when you do have a reason to draw attention to yourself, people will be naturally more curious and naturally more willing to reciprocate because you raised your hand first.
Now, I would add, I'm not as familiar with Facebook and the communities they have there. I know on Reddit, they have subreddits, which are basically groups you can join, subscribe to. And all of those have rules on like the right-hand side. It might be different on whatever device you're on, but it tells you, you know, what they allow, what they don't. So check those things out so you don't, you know, screw up. And because if you make a bad first impression, and this is your author name, and we're going to get to name in a moment. This is your author name, and if you begin by just spamming or whatever, you're dead to that community forever. Mm-hmm. So you're screwed. So be careful with that. Now, getting to that, though, one thing I wish I did starting out was have a pen name instead of my real name. So what do you think people should do if they're not writing yet? Do you think they should find a pen name like far removed from their real name? So, you know, they can have two different identities, maybe, because, you know, sometimes people can get really stalkery on these platforms. And if you have a social profile out there, maybe a previous job, maybe your family or whatever, people will find you and just start, you know, harassing or doxing you. So what do you consider, you know, when you're talking to authors about these things?
To really think about what their ultimate vision is, right? If you had the perfect author career, what does that look like? Do you want to be really big in just one genre, right? Do you want to say, I want to be, of course, Sean, if you said anything different, I'll be very concerned, because that's very off-brand. It'd be off-brand for you. Sure. But if you want to be the next George R.R. Martin, right, and say, I just want to write epic fantasy, right, and you don't want it to, say, cross-pollinate with your career, like if you're a teacher, for example, and you want to write Game of Thrones where there's incense and people getting their heads cut off, sure, yes, a pen name would absolutely work.
Dave has a little comic strip that's exactly that.
Yeah. So it's just to think about that, right? As opposed to if you're, like for me, for example, I work in marketing and I have my books in my office, even though they're not under Margaret McGriff, I do have my books in my office. And even me, I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to, but they were like so excited because we're all creative people and they're all very entrepreneurial people. So to me, it's not a big of a deal. But if you are a teacher or if you are in a profession where it's very sensitive of what other things that you do, then by all means, definitely have that pen name. If you want to write in multiple genres, then definitely get a pen name, because
damn it, too late.
Yeah, you know, but yeah, that's when you consider a pen name, you know, and doing that. I know when I launched my first books, I know I wanted to delve into different things, into different lanes. So I started out with a pen name and then kind of had a pen name for each type of lane that I want to explore. So
okay. Yeah, I think especially like with teachers that are writing, even like the racier romanticy stuff, like right now there's a bill being proposed in Oklahoma, from what I've heard. I haven't researched much into it, but they're trying to outlaw that kind of book and like make it a crime to write those, to own those. It's a stupid thing, but you never know where the country is going to go as far as, you know, what's acceptable in a community. And if you're writing something that people don't like and you have a job out, like especially as a teacher, hey, she's around our kids, she can't be influencing them with her smutty books. Mm-hmm. So yeah, be careful with that sort of thing, because it's wild out there.
No, it is. And you know, I have kids and my kids are growing up in the tech age, right? So my daughters Google me regularly. So they're like, yeah, I heard this podcast you were on the other day. And I'm just like, what in the, you know, they Google. So, you know, sometimes I have to be kind of sneaky about my pen name sometimes, because, you know, or just tell them outright, hey, you can't read that till you're like 25. and across the country somewhere.
I told my children that they had to be a certain age before they could go and listen to the old Better Off Undead episode. And then, yeah. You know.
But it's all about, you know, coming back to your author brand, right? What is it that you want to be known for? Right. What is it that you want people to see you as? And then as you get more established, it morphs into what people say about you. So it's kind of like twofold. And that's how your brand kind of evolves. So you can think about that as a new writer. You don't have to have 10 books. Again, it's super easier when you don't have any books out, because you can really map out where it is that you want to go and what it is that you want to do. And then what kind of marketing you're going to do, because if your audience is not on Instagram, then don't waste your time there. If you don't want to be the next Rebecca Yarros, then don't worry about Instagram. You know, don't worry about TikTok.
If you don't know who Rebecca Yarros is, that means probably.
Even better. That means you don't need to be her either, you know? So that's all I'm saying with that, is thinking about really where you want your author business to go, because there are so many different options and so many paths, and it can get super overwhelming. And then you feel like, I have to do all of the things. And you know, that's why with Sean, I asked, I'm like, what are you trying to be? Where are you going? That will dictate everything that you do.
And do you think that it makes a lot more sense to have that stuff figured out before you start? Or does it make sense to start and kind of figure out who your readers are? Or is it on a spectrum? Because it, like, if you understand marketing a little bit more, you can do some of that work ahead of time. But if you don't, you kind of need to understand your reader base a little bit more. Like, how prepared should you be before you step out into the world?
You should have a pretty good idea, but it does not have to be set in stone. It's not concrete, because it will evolve, you know, and it will change depending on where your writer career takes you. It's kind of like, you don't know if you're going to like a genre till you're actually writing in it, right? You don't know how that first book is going to go until you write it, right? But definitely have an idea, have an outline, right? And I kind of think about the marketing and the branding is, have an idea of where you want to go, but be open to changing, or be open to pivoting to where you're going.
Were you going to say something, Sean?
Yeah, I was. So, okay, this is actually not a rhetorical question. I don't know how you're going to answer this, but I'm curious. So we haven't talked about this at all, but if you're trying to figure out who your market is, you're trying to figure out some basic marketing plans, how do you feel about engaging AI in helping you figure out who your market is? Because it seems like ChatGPT would have a pretty good idea of who reads what genres. And if you don't even know, like, you know what you like, but you don't necessarily know what the psychographics or demographics of that genre are. Is that a good way to kind of brainstorm content ideas, or, you know, marketing ideas or pen name ideas or any of that, because you're using like an intelligence that understands the landscape better than you might?
Yeah, you can. And I think with anything with ChatGPT, when it comes to using it for strategy and brainstorming and research, just verify. Say, okay, if chat tells you that your ideal reader would be hanging out on Instagram and doing reels associated with Star Wars. Okay, cool. I'm going to go on Instagram and I'm going to put hashtag Star Wars, and I'm going to read and I'm going to look at each of these posts. I'm going to see who's creating them, look at their profiles. People love to talk about themselves, so they'll tell you if they are the cat lady in Missouri. If then you find out there are like 6 cat ladies in Missouri that love this genre and are reading these books, then my ideal reader loves cats and may live in the Midwest, right? But as your books come out, right? So this is where the learnings come. As your books come out and you find that people actually in California who have dogs are the majority of the people that are buying your books, you know, it's totally okay to go back and say, okay, we're going to revise. And I'm going to look at those comments and see what they said, what they liked, what they didn't like. Something else that I encourage writers to do is go to the books that you like. So go to your favorite books and then go to the ratings and look at the 3 stars. Because 3 stars, it's very mid. Because 5 is like, oh, it's great. And 1, it totally sucked. But 3 will give you that it was great, but I wish it had this. I wish it had that. I wish it wasn't so fast. I wish it wasn't so info dumpy, right? So then when you kind of look at yourself and say, okay, well, I don't like info dumps either. So I'm not going to write any info dumps in my books. So then when you're interacting with people and be like, yeah, I like that book too, and I didn't like the way it was info dumping. Oh my gosh, isn't that so annoying? Now you're having that dialogue, and it gives you information to, when I'm marketing someone, the first thing I'm going to tell them is, it's epic fantasy without the info dumps. That's
great advice.
Yeah, that's all you have to say. And it's like, great. You know, it was like, if the people who like your book also like watching Marvel and Uncharted, it's like, okay, what if Marvel and Uncharted had a baby? That's your book, right? What would that look like? You know, so that gives you a lot of insight to who your ideal reader is. So I like looking at different reviews for the books and stuff that I like and kind of see what people like and don't like. So when I'm doing those comparisons or putting together my character, who is my ideal reader, who I'm writing for, then that gives me a lot of insight and information.
How important do you think comparisons are? Because I know in the company we use them 100% of the time. Like, it's a rule. If you pitch an idea, you have to compare it to other things. So I know how important that is to us as a studio, because it allows us to, it gives us shorthand. How important do you think that is for the reader?
I think it's super important, because you have to give people more of the same but different. So you can use the comparisons, right, and say it's like this but this, and that's a quick and shorthand way for people to understand, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, you know, right? Like if I told you it was Constantine but with vampires that don't glitter like Twilight, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're like, yup, I'm down. Tell me more about it. How does that work?
You're really good in your pitches about exactly that. You will tell the reader exactly what it's like so they feel safe and comfortable, and then pivot and tell them how it's different and therefore better.
It's like Game of Thrones, but I'm not going to take 12 years for the next book.
No, Margaret has a great way of positioning her little micro pitches, seeds we call them, they're very confident. They come off as, look, I know you're going to like this because these are these other things that everybody likes, but most things do this, my thing does that. And so that's kind of like always the positioning in it. And I think that just works on a human psychological level, because we want to know what it's like, because it gives us something to hold on to, right? So even a show like, you know, Severance, which you can't really compare Severance to a lot of things. Severance is so good right now that I'm like, just waiting for enough episodes to stack up so that I could not go through the pain of having to wait for them, because I'm really spoiled now that I can watch my stuff. And Severance is so good, but like my mom asked me, you know, to explain it, because, you know, I think Adam Scott was on Stephen Colbert, and she's like, they were making all these jokes and I didn't get it. I don't watch Severance. In a sentence, can you tell me what it's about? And it's kind of hard to do that, but you need shorthand to at least start the conversation. And I said, well, like, imagine if The Office was a Charlie Kaufman, you know, movie. And all of a sudden, that's not what it is at all, but it definitely opens the door to have a conversation there, right? Charlie Kaufman is weird and...
I was thinking Fringe, but okay.
And The Office is something that is very accessible to people stuck in an office job, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not what Severance is. It's not Office meets Charlie Kaufman. But at least by having those two anchor points in the conversation, I was able to immediately get her in a place where she could hear what the rest of the story was kind of about.
Yeah, and it helps because you're engaging with people so often, like you're doing if you before you write the book, that you can catch on those things. Like if they like Supernatural, but they hate it that it was 16 seasons long, I'm like, it's Supernatural in the trilogy. Yeah. Beautiful.
Right. Supernatural, right? Waste your time.
You know, it's and they already know, and they'll be like, yes, because we talked about this or we have memes about this, and then it'll connect and make sense.
Now, one of the questions that I think pertains to somebody like Sean more than me, because I'm a horror writer. I like sci-fi and horror thrillers mostly. So if I blog about something, it's pretty easy to know, you know, my readers. I'm going to do like a movie review or talk about something. Sean's all over the place. So how do you decide for somebody like Sean in social media what things to focus on if he's writing all over the place?
You will find the common threads, right? So if I was briefing something for Sean and say, what are you going to write a blog about, right? So the common threads is you don't like to be put in the box. Matter of fact, you took the box and you chucked it off the balcony. You said later for the box, right? You like things that are quirky.
Maybe Sean in a corner.
Yeah, you know, you like things that are quirky. You like things that don't follow a formula, right? Because you don't.
Yeah.
Right? So focusing on how you, let's say if your ideal readers are copywriters, all right? So you're saying, yeah, I'm targeting copywriters. You know, the non-formula way of coming up with pitches in like half an hour, right? How to ditch the template and just come up with something off the top and still make it work. You know, just really honing in on all of those threads that kind of pull your brand as you together, right? You would be the one to throw in Severance with Expanse and make that work, right? People will just be here to be like, how do you make those two connection points with something that are so different?
Yeah, right? I think if you're talking all over the place, you, like for me, and we're live in this experiment, right? So we're putting all this stuff out, we're doing daily YouTube, and the idea is to talk about one subject and then move on to the next subject. So in January, it was I Am John Titor was the book. So it's all talking about time travel, the nature of time, all that. And then the next one right now is Plot 147, which is a book I wrote with Catherine. And it's about like the movie business and the stories that we are and are not allowed to tell. And so all the content is based around that. Next month is a book called Six Dickbags in Belize, which is so absurdly loosely based on an actual trip that I took a couple of years ago with my son. And so all the themes there are about like perspective and, you know, like having male friendships as an adult and how weird that is and, you know, all these different things. And they're very different books, they're very different experiences, but I'm putting like my perspective into each one of those things. And the hope is that you just get a few more readers with each book. And even if it's a disconnected premise or genre or whatever for the next time, they like you and the connection that you're bringing to the narrative enough to follow you along. But it is about knowing your why, and it is about knowing the tax that is going to come with those decisions. So the tax for me not having a strong genre is that I'd be lucky to move over a third of people each time instead of two-thirds of people each time, because bringing people along on the strength of your voice and connection, unfortunately, is more difficult than bringing them along on the strength of your genre. Genre is just easier to attach to. Yeah. But I also feel like in a lot of cases, the people, even though you gather fewer of them at a time, they're stronger connections over time too, because you go deeper.
But I would also challenge you that with each of those three different stories, you are someone that will appreciate good storytelling, irregardless of what that genre is.
Yes.
So you're talking to the person who loves a good story. They don't care about necessarily what the genre is, as long as it's a good story. Is it a story that challenges their perceptions, right? Is it a story that totally goes off the grid? If there's someone that fully understood everything everywhere all at once on first go, right? That movie is not for everyone. It's targeting a specific person, right? And there are a whole lot of genre bending things and muchness going on in that movie, right? So finding what strings them all along together, like what attracts you to all of those three books, regardless of genre, right? And I
I think also it's knowing who you are as a creator, because the better you can articulate that, the better. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even, you know, it's like when Stephen King wrote The Shining, and, you know, years later he was like, oh my God, I didn't even know that I related to the main character who's an alcoholic writer, right? And we become a little bit distant from the things we create, and we don't realize how much of ourselves that we're putting in there. But at this point, we've deconstructed my shit enough to know, and me enough to know, that a common denominator for a lot of my work is somebody who's deluding themselves, somebody who is telling them a story that isn't quite right, and they have to like come to the face-to-face with the reality of who they are, right? So that common thread is in, you know, a lot of books. It's not in Titor, because Titor was a specific thing, but it's in most of the other things that will come out under my name. And so if somebody likes that journey of a character discovery, then even though that's not a genre, it's a character type that they can launch onto. Latch onto. It's a journey that they understand and want to repeat. You know, like I have my own version of the hero's journey, which is just like the, you know, the come to Jesus journey, you know, which is just, it's different.
And I would say as a new writer, to not feel intimidated about not knowing what that thread is, because I just learned like yesterday after writing, I think book number 10 was my third one with you guys. So book number 10, it's like, oh, I write a lot about this one thing. I done had so many seeds in different genres and in different audiences, but there is this common thread in all the stories that I like to tell, right? So as a new writer, that may not be apparent right away. Sometimes you have to try some things out and you come at the end and it's like, you know what? I didn't like how that went. So that goes in the trunk that of the manuscripts you will never see ever. But the learning is, okay, that's not the kind of story I want to write. And you're right about being confident in who you are, because in this day and age with so many, I say so many, but so few standouts, it's super easy to try to be like the fantasy author who, like Rebecca Yarros, that she's the one that wrote Fourth Wing. She had a whole Times Square billboard for a fantasy novel. Like, who does that aside from George R. R. Martin, who got a dragon on the Empire State Building when House of Dragon came out marketing, right? And so it's super easy to try to be like, I want to be like. But in this space, everybody's trying to be like. So in order to differentiate yourself, really be okay with being who you are and leaning into that. Because there is a space for you and there is a niche of readers who are tired of seeing Fourth Wing every single post, right? They want something different. Maybe they want Fourth Wing and Game of Thrones together. Maybe they want the dragon riders in Westeros and that type of gritty darkness, right? Maybe that's where your sweet spot is. So yeah, it's being confident in yourself and leaning into that with your marketing, because that's what your brand is. It's not trying to be anyone else but you. Because if you do that and you try that, it's exhausting. Then you quit it all together and you say, screw that. And then another 5 years goes by and you have all these books sitting that are moving and not doing anything.
Where should authors, I know this is going to be genre dependent, but is there like a rule of thumb for where authors should spend their time with social media and stuff? Are blogs even relevant anymore with audiences? And if so, what audiences are still reading blogs?
I think when you come to any social media tools, they're just that. They're tools in a toolbox, right? And what's going to determine what tools you take out of that box is who your ideal reader is. And so when I'm working with my job, we have personas. When I'm working with other writers, because I also coach and mentor other writers, I'm talking, your ideal reader determines everything, right? So if your ideal reader sits on the subway every day going from Queens to Manhattan and wants to read a blog, that's where you need to be. Flip side, if your reader is a waitress and she only has 10 minutes in between shifts and want something funny or book recommendation, go to TikTok, right? So who your ideal reader is, it's independent of genre, who your ideal reader is will determine what tools out of the toolbox. Because yes, I can tell you blogs are very relevant because you have Google search and now it's AI Google search, right? So now AI is crawling and giving answers to the question. So if you type in Google, what are books that are like Fourth Wing and Game of Thrones? You know, and you SEO keyword that right, it'll come up on top, right? But it really all depends who your ideal reader is. So that's why I say don't jump and try to do all the things. Take the time to learn and figure out who your ideal reader is. And chances are that ideal reader is a lot like you. So where are you spending your time?
No. Chances are not that they're a lot like Dave. I reject.
He's riding the subway with a gun saying, please let me find the right person.
You know, so if you're spending most of your time, right, looking for books on Instagram, then it'll feel natural to you to go to Instagram and you'll be more likely to stick with it. as opposed to, let's say, TikTok with me. Ain't nobody got time for that. You know, I have to learn TikTok because it's part of my job. But sit up here and say, I'm going to launch a TikTok account. No, I don't have time to post 5 times a day. Like I got adulting to do. That's why the younger children can do that, because they don't got that much to do. Right. You know, so it really all depends.
I was throwing it back on TikTok earlier. So.
And that's if we even have it. So then there's another caveat, right? Because I also say social media is a tool, but you don't want to put all of your eggs in that basket. And that's why it comes back to blogs, because your blog, your website, and your email, you own that. There is no middleman between your email and hitting the inbox. There is none, right?
Yeah, and just to be clear, our YouTube strategy is designed to get people to the website, which is designed to get people onto an email list, because ultimately our YouTube strategy is just another email strategy. All strategies should be email strategies. Facebook strategy should be email strategies. Mm-hmm. Direct sales should be email strategies, because mm-hmm. that's how you get the return customers. The first customer is whatever, but you want a lifetime value, and that means email, essentially.
Exactly. And YouTube is very interesting, because YouTube is not really counted as social media. YouTube is a search platform. So it has its own SEO game going on. It has its own search going on, right? And that's why it's such a powerful tool, because it doesn't operate like an Instagram or a TikTok or a Facebook. And I mean, now that the algorithms are changing, it used to be before, way back in the day, like a year ago, when you can scroll chronologically, right? And now you'll see a post that was posted like 10 days ago, right? And it's all interest-based. So they're really leaning into what people are interested in, not who you're following and not how many times you're posting. It's like, she liked one dog video. I'm going to show you every dog video. I'm going to show you every dog in a shelter, and it's going to make you cry. It's going to be every video, right? Until you tell it something different. Right, so
Dave, should you consider some YouTube content that's just about people pissing?
You're doing a callback to a joke on a podcast that's not even around anymore, bro.
No, but you know how, like, we were talking earlier about knowing who you are as a writer and knowing your themes and your tropes and all of this, and sometimes you're too close? This is actually a true story, you guys. So I've been writing with Dave for about 10 years, and a reader, you know, emailed and said, how come everything you write with Dave has a scene with someone going to the bathroom? And I'm like, that can't possibly be true. And so, like, because I'm just embarrassed at this point that I've been writing with him for 10 years and I've never picked up on this. And I'm like, I'm sure it happens frequently, occasionally, whatever. There's no way it's every book. Dude, you guys, it's every book. Like, going back, and like, every book that we have has one scene where somebody just has to go to the bathroom.
Because every book I write has a scene where somebody's waking up. And what's the first thing you do when you wake up? I piss. I don't know about you. Are you, am I alien?
People wake up in every book I've ever written, but I control the camera and I don't drag the reader into the fucking labyrinth.
I don't describe it in painful detail.
But that's like picking up on your themes, right? And knowing who you are as a writer. So if someone is like, how are these people go on a quest for 7 days and nobody stops to use the bathroom or to go to eat? Like, how realistic is that right now? You know? Mm-hmm. There you go.
So, yeah, Sean completely derailed that. I was going to ask, how important is it for a writer to have a website nowadays? And what what should be the bare minimum of what your website should offer or do?
You should definitely have a website. And like I was mentioning earlier, with social media being as finicky, social media was always finicky. And now we're at the point in time where whole platforms can go away in like the click of a button, right? And so your website is a place where you can drive people to that you own, right? So if it doesn't have to be like a J.K. Rowling, like, sprawling website. And I love her website. It's gorgeous. It doesn't have to be that deep, right? Just something that says who you are, what you write, And then if you want to have a blog, that's okay. But again, think about your ideal reader, but at least claim your space on the Google search engine, which will be your website. So if you are going to have multiple pen names, just kind of think about what you want that overall name to be. I know I have multiple pen names, but mine is M. McGriff, and the way that I want to design it, it's going to lead off into different microsites. You don't have to be that complicated because I'm an overachiever. You don't have to do that. But I will say, at least have it have who you are and what you write. And that's just, it could be just as simple as just one landing page and just taking your time building it.
And newsletter offer?
You can have a newsletter offer. Like I said, it's much easier to do before you have a book out. So if you want to just start with a short story, mm-hmm. and what is going, you know, because the first book, you know, takes a minute. That first book usually takes way longer than it does after subsequent books. So if you want to start building up that list, I did that with my very first book. Before I published it, I had an offer out for 2 years. So I spent like 2 years building up my list and my Instagram. And so just a monthly newsletter, just things you want to talk about. What does your ideal reader want to know about? That'll help you figure out what to write. And just talk to that person.
Where can people find you?
Okay, well, currently I am marketing my Dark Urban Fantasy pen name. So you can find me on Instagram at margaret.bernard9 on Instagram. And if you like funny memes, Star Wars, and Marvel, you're in the right spot.
All right. Well, thank you, Margaret, for being on.
Money where your mouth is. I love it.
We will see you next time.
Thank you.
You for being a part of everything. Awesome, Margaret.
The shadows of the Sunshine State, where Dacted is his home, lives a man named David Wright, who pens the great unknown. Diet Coke runs through his veins, a decoy wallet keeps him rich. Paranoia fuels his pen, and creativity's his niche. Write, publish, repeat, it echoes through.